Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at I Eat Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I have a great show for you today. My guests will be Taylor Kokalis Suarez and Dorothy Nagel. Both of them are the co-founders of Good Food Jobs, and I'll tell you more about that when I invite them on in a little bit. But first, I want to share with you some of the exciting things going on in and around the city and some things that you can all do to take action and be involved. So as we all set out a week and a half ago for the People's Climate March, you know, after the Climate March, we saw the Rockefeller Foundation divest from fossil fuels and the UN climate summit. They made some headway, slow, I must say, but some headway towards a global effort to lower greenhouse gas emissions. But we will have to keep up the pressure. That's basically what I want to share with all of you, that there's always so many things that we can do to let our government officials know where we stand and that we care about our environment. And that's important for all of us to take some action. And every week on my website, I put up some things you can do to take action. And this week, I'm asking you all to sign a petition to stop Syngenta's radical new bee-killing pesticide plan. And they're introducing a new, stronger than Monsanto's pesticide, and they're requesting permission from the Environmental Protection Agency to allow this bee-killing pesticide to be sprayed on alfalfa, corn, barley, and wheat. And the pesticide, like I said, is stronger than Roundup, and it needs to be squashed. And we need to all sign this petition. So please go on to my website at ieatgreen.com and you know, sign this petition. You know, bees, as you all know, are really being devastated by the use of all the pesticides, and without bees, we won't have our food. So it's really important for us to all connect those dots. Everything is connected, and as I've said before, that's one of the reasons I love talking about food so much, because it connects everything. It connects our community. Everyone has to eat. It connects the environment. It connects our health. It connects the money that revolves in around our communities. It affects everything. So really becoming involved in our food and our food system and the foods we eat and the choices we make affects so many things. So trying to follow those dots really is helpful. Cornell University is also trying to release new GMO moths that will kill non-GMO moths. And there has not been a full safety review of these GMO moths. And so we are asking you to sign this petition to prevent them from releasing genetically modified moths into our environment. As I said, they're supposedly supposed to kill the non-GMO moths, but right now we don't know what they will do long-term and how it will affect our environment long-term. Chances are it won't be good. So we're asking for your support there as well. Annie's Homegrown, which is, you know, the pasta, the first healthy macaroni and cheese that you could buy out on the market way back, going over 30 years ago. They were really innovative, and the founder, who hasn't been part of Annie's for a while, you know, really was committed to creating a good product and putting it out there. However, it had, you know, was taken over a while ago from people that did not have the original mission plan, and they've now sold out to General Mills. And as you know, General Mills is one of the many big corporations that's part of the Grocery Manufacturers Association, and they're part of the lawsuit suing Vermont for passing the law requiring GMO labeling. And so we're asking you to boycott Annie's, as much as you probably love the product and your kids probably love it. But, you know, boycott the product, write to them, let them know that you don't, you know, the sale's already gone through, but that you want General Mills to remove themselves from the Grocery Manufacturers Association. so that they're not part of this lawsuit, and let them know that you like products to be labeled with GMOs so that you know what you are eating. And we all have to take responsibility for that. The EU requires labeling, and what has happened because of that is that most of the products that we buy here that contain genetically modified ingredients are made for the European market without genetically modified ingredients, which tells us that the big corporations have the capability of making these products GMO-free. They just don't want to because it's cheaper. And our country has not cared. People have just laid down and allowed them to walk all over us. And we need to stand up, brush off, and take a stand and let them know we do care. And we want you to make it GMO-free for us as well. Of course, what that's going to mean is that the farmers are going to have to start growing GMO-free corn and wheat and soy so that they can meet the demand. So that is all going to take time, but we have to start that pressure now and start that ball rolling. So please go on and let General Mills know how you feel about that. Another thing that's come to my attention recently is the pharmaceuticals found in our drinking water. And I was really surprised to know that all of our drinking water processing plants, you know, they're designed to screen out chlorine and fluorides and PCBs and other chemicals that might be found in our water. But they are not designed to remove the pharmaceuticals that are in our water. And it's become alarming, the amount of pharmaceuticals, with everybody on Prozac and taking ibuprofen and Advil and birth control pills. All of these residues, the parts that our bodies do not absorb, comes out in our urine and is in our water system. And it's important for all of us to really look into upgrading our water filters. I've had a water filter that I've had for years, but it did not screen out pharmaceuticals. And now I'm back in the market looking for the right water filter. So that's something to really think about, you know, and we need to also get loud about it so that our wastewater systems start improving how they screen our water and test our water. Because right now that's something that's really just going under the radar. And most of us, including myself, have not been thinking about that. But when you think of how many more people are taking drugs these days, you know, we are a drug-filled, community and country. Seems like I don't watch TV much, but when I do turn it on, I'm shocked by the advertisements for pharmaceutical drugs, you know, and telling people to go ask their doctor for this and that. And doctors just give it to us. So, we have to think that that's all coming out, including, you know, people that are on chemo, you know, that goes into the wastewater too. So if you just stop and think about all the people that are taking medicines and all the combinations of those medicines in our water, it's not a good thing. So we all need to get really loud about that as well. Lots of great things are going on in and around the city. This weekend continues the Long Island Fair at Old Bethpage Restoration Village. This Long Island Fair has been going on for over 100 years, since the mid-1800s. And it's a huge fair celebrating agriculture on Long Island. And it's a lot of fun, and it goes all weekend long. So you can just Google Old Long Island Fair or Old Bethpage Restoration Village and find out more information about it. But it's from October 2nd through the 5th, that's today through Sunday. It was last weekend as well, and I heard from some people that went that it was great. So check that out. Also, tomorrow at Roberta's in Brooklyn, I'm not sure if there's tickets left, though. They might be sold out. Carlo Bettrini, who is the founder of the slow food movement, he started in Italy 25 years ago, and Alice Waters, who's been who brought the whole concept of local and clean food to America. They will be together at Roberta's in Brooklyn tomorrow at noon, talking about 25 years of the slow food movement. October 4th there's a screening of the movie Growing Farmers at the Queen's Library as part of the Rural Root Film Festival, and that's at 3 o'clock on October 4th. October 9th, there's a Food Day celebration at Farmingdale State College. They're celebrating Food Day, which is actually later on in the month, but pretty much any day throughout the month of October, people are celebrating Food Day. So keep your eyes open for that. There will be lots of celebrations. But Farmingdale State College is doing it on October 9th from 10 to 4. There will be food demos, tastings, presentations from local farmers and food activists and educators. I will be there doing a cooking demo anytime after noon, so come on down to that. And then in the evening, the Food Day continues with a medicinal workshop and potluck in Farmingdale Sustainable Garden, and that starts at 5:30. October 10th, the New York City Food Forum workshop is happening, and the question this year is why equity matters to New York City and our food system. And that's being hosted at CUNY School of Public Health, and that is on 2180 3rd Avenue at 119th Street, and that's all day from 9:30 to 3. So you can go on to the CUNY School of Public Health to find out more information about that. October 11th is the Global Frackdown, and that is everywhere. There's events taking place and gatherings all around the country and all around the world. Here on Long Island, there will be one in Long Beach at 1 o'clock where the Boardwalk and National Boulevard meet. And we're really banding together not only to stop fracking but to also stop the liquefied natural gas port that they're trying to build at Port Ambrose. So that's going to be off the coast of Long Island and New Jersey, and it's really a bad thing to have that right out in our water. So please come out and stand up for that. October 12th, you can celebrate Food Day with Slow Food East End. They are having a potluck celebration from 4:30 to 7:30. Also an opportunity to bring canned goods for a local food pantry. And that will be at Dodds and Etter Landscape Design Center in Sag Harbor. October 12th, you can find out more information on the Slow Food East End website. Slow Food North Shore, formerly Slow Food Huntington, will have a screening on October 14th called The Sturgeon Queen. And that's celebrating or a documentary about the store Russ and Daughters on the Lower East Side, and that will be at 7:30. Following the film, we will have a typical Jewish food reception. So come down to that. October 15th, Edible Long Island is celebrating their first annual anniversary party. Edible magazines have been around for a while in many communities, but this is our first year anniversary for Long Island, and that's the section between Queens and the East End. And it's been kind of like a dead zone for food for a long time, but we're starting slowly to catch on. And so come celebrate Edible Long Island's anniversary party on October 15th. I'll be leaving, actually, on October 16th to head to Europe to celebrate the International Slow Food Conference called Terra Madre and Salone del Gusto, and that's in Torino, Italy. And slow food, as you know, is about good, fair, and clean food, and it's a movement that we all need to jump on board with. They really promote local producers, they promote heirloom quality products, and they're really just a great, great organization. So find out more information on the Slow Food USA website. October 23rd, there's a documentary screening called Cowspiracy at the Sustainability Institute at Malloy's main campus in Rockville Center. October 24th, the New York Coalition for Healthy School Food, they're having their 10th anniversary gala, and that's at the New York Academy of Medicine. And every year, you know, for 10 years, I've been there, and I will be missing this one because I'll be in Italy for this Slow Food Conference. So I'll be sad to miss it, but it's a great event. It's celebrating all delicious vegan foods, and there's over 25 restaurants and caterers making delicious food for this event, and it's really spectacular, great music, lots of great people, so come out for that. And that's it. And before I invite my guests on, I want to share a quick recipe for you. As many of you know, this is we are in the midst of the Jewish New Year. Started last week with Rosh Hashanah, and it ends on Saturday at breakfast for Yom Kippur. And there's lots of traditional food that people eat at breakfast. It's usually a dairy meal with things like quiches and bagels and lox and that kind of thing. But a very traditional dish is called kasher varnishkes with sauteed onions, and I put in portobello mushrooms. And so this is one of our favorite family recipes that I'd like to share with you. The ingredients are: you'll need 1.5 cups of buckwheat, 2 eggs, 2 tablespoons olive oil, 3 cups of boiling water, 3/4 teaspoon salt, 4 large portobello mushrooms, 2 onions coarsely chopped, 1/4 cup olive oil, 3 cloves garlic, 1 tablespoon tamari, 1 bag of bow ties. You can use either whole wheat or organic regular. 1/2 cup of chopped parsley, 1 tablespoon of aji marin, and then salt and pepper to taste. You're going to start by putting the 3 cups of water on to boil in a large pot and just salt the water. Meanwhile, in a large bowl, whisk the 2 eggs and add the kasha to the bowl and coat the kasha with the 2 egg mixture. And this just helps the kasha stay flaky. And what you're going to do is you're going to then, in a large skillet, heat the olive oil and add that kasha mixture and cook it just until it gets brown, so that each of the individual grains of the kasha are browned and crumbly. Then you're going to add that kasha mixture to the boiling water, cover it, and let that simmer for 30 minutes. The bow ties, you're just going to cook on your own. You can do that ahead of time according to the directions. I always like to make it just a little al dente, so it's not going to get too mushy in the dish. And then in a large skillet, you're going to saute the onions and the garlic and olive oil and cook those until they're slightly browned. Add the portobello mushrooms and saute those until they're soft. Then add the mirin and the tamari and saute that until all the liquid's absorbed. And the mushrooms give off their own liquid, so just keep sauteing it till most of that mixture is absorbed, because you're going to be adding that to the kasha and you don't want the dish to be too wet. And so once the mushrooms are all finished, you're going to take the kasha out of the pot and put it into a large bowl and mix it with the bow ties and the sauteed mushrooms. And mix all that together and season it with salt and pepper to taste. If you want to add a little more tamari, you can do that as well. And then add lots of that chopped parsley, all of the chopped parsley, and you can add more if you'd like. I really love the chopped parsley in there. Not only does it give it that green brightness, but it, because everything else is kind of brown, but it just really adds to the fresh taste of the dish. And that is it. Enjoy it. Please give me feedback. I always love to hear how you like things. And have a nice holiday for those of you celebrating. Now it's my pleasure to introduce my two guests, Taylor Cocalis Suarez and Dorothy Nagel, are the co-founders of Good Food Jobs. And Taylor, both of them met at Cornell University. Taylor was there studying hospitality management, and then she went on to get her master's in food culture at the University of Gastronomic Science in Parma, Italy. Just loved the whole food movement. When she came back to New York, she worked at Murray's Cheese for a while, before deciding to partner up with Dorothy. Dorothy grew up on a farm, but studied interior design at Cornell, and after doing that for a while, just missed her connection to farming and food. And so they partnered up and started Good Food Jobs, and I'll let them tell us more about that. Taylor and Dorothy, you with me?
We're here.
Yes, we are.
Great. Well, welcome. So glad you could join me on my show today. So what
Thanks
is
for having us,
Delaney. Oh, my pleasure. It's going to be a little challenging with both of you on the line so we don't step on each other's toes. So whichever one of you would like to, why don't we start with Dorothy, why don't you tell us what Good Food Jobs is and what inspired you and Taylor to start this?
Well, we had talked for a very long time, ever since we became friends, which was around 2004 at Cornell, about starting a business together. We had this idea that was really based in our friendship that we got along so well. We believed in so many of the same things. We came from really different backgrounds. Taylor grew up in the suburbs of New Jersey, and I grew up on a farm in South Central Kentucky. But we were really kindred spirits, and we thought we could really do something great in the world of food and have a great business together. I really never thought that it would be the kind of business we have now. We talked a lot about businesses where we would, have a storefront or be working with people, face-to-face every day. And what we had was a website where we're mostly behind our computers, but still connecting with people all the time. And that is a combination I really did not anticipate. Good Food Jobs is a job search engine for people who want to find meaningful work in food. And people can sign up for free and search our jobs for free, apply to jobs for free. And we based our revenue model on a pay-per-post system. So people pay $60 to post their job. It's also free for them to join, and it's a hopefully easy process for them to go online, post the job, and check out and have it published.
Uh-huh. And what makes a food job a good food job versus a bad food job? Taylor?
Oh, well, it's a bit of a loose definition. But essentially, what happened was when Dorothy and I were looking for food-related work, we started looking in places and noticing that no matter what job search engine you went on, whether it was Craigslist or Media Bistro or Monster.com, you would type in food, and the only opportunities that would come up were often solely related to the restaurant. So you could find line cook positions, you could find dishwasher positions, you could find hostess and server positions. And we knew that there was this whole burgeoning community that was interested in food in a much richer way, mostly in terms of sustainable food and food culture. So what we did was say, okay, how can we create this centralized meeting spot for people that are interested in food in this type of way? And that is the thing that really brings people together. And then beyond that, there could be all different types of work. So whether you have an interest in business management or accounting or media or agriculture or education, you can find all sorts of opportunities on the site. So what we've done is create a system where if a job poster posts a position, they submit the position, but it doesn't actually go live to the site right away. And we often check to ensure that the position pertains to our editorial policy, which very loosely states that, you know, we reserve the right to not post the position if it's not related to sustainability or food culture. But as you can imagine, there's a really wide spectrum in terms of what that entails. So it doesn't mean that the only way you're posted is if you're some sort of, you know, organic farmer. It means that we look to see what the intentions are in terms of how you support sustainability and food culture. So that could be, an organization that teaches people about agriculture and nutrition, or it could be, a restaurant that's focused on local sourcing, or it could be something that educates people about traditional food cuisines. So it's not one specific thing, but we kind of do it in such a way that we can start conversations about what people are doing and also just have a chance to really learn in depth about what people are doing.
Uh-huh. Did you ever read the book behind, or know about the book Behind the Kitchen Door by Saru Jayaman?
Yeah, you know, I read that last year. I was really moved by it.
Yeah. because the Restaurant Opportunity Center, you know, very often, you know, they've kind of brought to the forefront have some restaurants that are, you know, in the good food movement, one would suspect, where they're, you know, everything that you read about, you know, they're sourcing the food from good places and they're, you know, it's local and it's raised sustainably. But then you go behind the kitchen door and they're talking about how the, you know, they're still having illegal immigrants and paying them horrible wages, and, you know, and the whole other side of the restaurant might not be so sustainable. How do you deal with that kind of, like, how do you screen for that, or can you not?
Well, reading that book really opened my mind up to how, even when we thought we were focusing on something fairly broad, like sustainability and food culture, there were still such a diversity of issues to improve on. So that's something that has been hard for us as we launched the site. We both have had experiences in work that were less than ideal, and we're aware that other people have the similar or even harder struggles than us, and it's a really difficult thing to monitor. It's obviously our goal to promote companies that have good management practices and are always trying to advance their company and the people who work for them, but the truth is there's not a lot of ways that we can really monitor that. So we mm-hmm. sort of created a system where we can monitor sustainability and food culture, and we understand we have a certain amount of control over that. But beyond that, our question is, what other resources can we create to help advance the bigger mission, which is essentially revolutionizing the whole concept of human resources and how people look for jobs, how people get hired for jobs, the culture of job seeking and hiring and working.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think it's also really important to note that one of the things that we try to do more than anything is, you know, it's hard to do a full investigation of a company before they post. But I think what we've done really well is be able to cultivate this community of support and really have, a solid voice. Like, one of the things that people tell us all the time is like, oh my God, it's so nice to meet you. I read your newsletters all the time. And it's so nice to feel like there's another person, a real person on the other end of things. And so when people, you know, write us emails, they're often surprised to get one of us responding back. But it's true that, you know, we're always here and we're always interested in helping provide guidance and support, and knowing that there are so many issues. I think that was one of the more surprising parts about starting up the website, is that, yeah, just because people are focusing on sustainability and food culture doesn't necessarily mean that they are good employers, and how sort of dire the employment situation is, particularly in regard to food. And so we've actually had folks reach out to us before expressing particular issues with workplaces. And while, you know, while we can't single-handedly solve the issues, what we do is make very concerted efforts to, you know, reach out to specific employers, start conversations, create an awareness, create a support system, be able to connect people with folks that may be able to help them in more of a legal capacity, and really just bring up the larger conversation in general. Because I think that, you know, part of what we need to do as a culture is to say, you know, this type of behavior is not acceptable, and how, what are our resources and tools that we can provide that can help diminish that sort yeah. of, you know, unprofessional and unfair behavior.
Yeah, because, I mean, the statistics are just unbelievable. Not only how many people work in food and, you know, fast food for that matter, but mm-hmm. how they're the lowest paid, most of them are the lowest paying jobs, and, you know, they're not given sick days. You know, there's all this stuff of, you know, you go to a restaurant and your server is sick because they can't take the day off because they don't get a sick day, you know. They get penalized, yeah. and they can't afford to miss work. And so it perpetuates, you know, this bad situation. And,
we're also working with a majority of the people that are posting on our site are really small businesses. So maybe they really rely very heavily on their employees, or they don't have a lot of systems in place. And all of these things can contribute to, you know, working out a lot of kinks along the way, to say the least.
Mm-hmm. And what sort of impact do you think Good Food Jobs actually has on the greater food movement?
Oh, that's a good question.
I was going to say, did you see how either of us was waiting for the other one to chime in?
Well, is it the impact that we know we have, or the impact we hope we have? I often say that it's so hard to see the forest for the trees when I'm working day to day, but I frequently get emails from people who remind me in very simple and heartfelt ways that what we're doing has made an impact on them. Sometimes they say, I found a job through your site and I couldn't be happier. And sometimes they say, I've been searching for years. I still haven't found that job, but you provide a resource, a sense of community, a voice of support that I couldn't, you know, do this without. So what we do is, I hope, two things. One is to show how many jobs there are in food available out there, and provide a sort of window on this ever-growing field. And the other is be that voice of support for people, that there are other people out there who want to do what they are interested in. There are people who are already doing it. The old constructs around what it means to have a career and what your job title says about you and what your resume says about you are not the only ways to go about making a living for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it's funny. I almost see your job almost like as matchmakers, you know, like, you know, the old Jewish lady who was a matchmaker, you know. Do you ever find where you, like, hear about a job or someone's posting a job and you know a person that would be great for that, and you kind of can just match them up?
Of course.
I would think
that. That definitely happens. But the really funny thing is that, you know, we created this mechanism by which we can do two things. We can make a living, so it has some sort of, you know, economic capacity to it. And then the other thing that it does is draw people in. So people think that they need jobs, and so they come to us for jobs. And so we always are, we're kind of sneaky, because those are very important things, and they allow us to start much bigger, more important conversations. And so, you know, I don't want to say that the job search engine is just a farce, but it is the way in which we're able to attract and start conversations with people. And I think what we're really interested in doing on a much deeper level is changing the whole culture surrounding jobs and turn it in more into livelihoods, and figure out, you know, if there's, and we live in such a soundbite culture, like Dorothy said, you know, a lot of times people are often judged by their job title, or, you know, how impressive it is, or what sort of things that they can just spout off at a dinner party. And what we're really interested in doing is saying, okay, you know, a lot of the things that are the undercurrent of our current culture and our job culture aren't necessarily true. You know, you can create your own path. You can be creative in the way that you do this. You can start new things. And I think that, you know, the whole reason why we sort of started with the jobs is because that's where people thought they needed to start. But that hopefully what we can see over the course of, you know, a few decades is that Good Food Jobs didn't just get people to get jobs. It got them to, you know, start all sorts of different alternative food-related businesses and projects and endeavors, and get people thinking differently about, you know, how they live their lives and what they value and what things are important to them, and how each individual person can contribute and make a difference.
Mm-hmm. That's great. You know, it is so needed. And, you know, as a fellow foodie, you know, who's so passionate about it, you know, I often, you know, meet people who, what they do for their livelihood is really what they loved when they were in school, but it's not necessarily what they went to school for. Like a lot of times, you know, people, mm-hmm. you know, really, you know, what they were interested in is what they did, like in the club on the side or in the evenings, and they studied mm-hmm. some other area. But when they got out, you know, similar to you, Dorothy, right? You just, you know, food was your passion. You studied interior design, but you came back to what you loved and found a way to make that work. And I think mm-hmm. the people that can do that, you know, usually end up being the happiest, you know, that their livelihood is something that they're passionate about, that has a deeper connection to them besides just the 9-to-5 paying the bills.
Yeah, and I would say that I'm a big fan of college. I'm a proponent of education in all forms. But I noticed in my own experience that going through school, I very much felt I was being directed on, there was a lot of structure. I was on a set path, and I understood all the steps involved. And my personality is such that I follow the steps, you know, and I look forward to at the end of each step saying, great, that's the right answer, you know, right being in quotation marks. And now you can move on to the next thing. And what I felt when I graduated was that I got to the top of that ladder and then there was nothing there. So I'm really interested in how we can encourage young people to certainly take their education seriously and enjoy getting an education, but also understand that we as humans have multiple passions. Our career path might take on many different iterations, and we have the power to change our own identities and to take a new path when we are ready for it.
Right. Absolutely. Let's take a couple minute break, and when we come back, I want to, you know, hear some of the challenges for you in getting that off the ground and where you think it's going now. So everyone, you're listening to Dorothy Nagel and Taylor Cocales Suarez from Good Food Jobs, and I'm Bhavani at IE Green. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. Hello, everyone, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And my guests today are Taylor Cocales Suarez and Dorothy Nagel. They are the co-founders of this great website called Good Food Jobs. You with me?
We're here.
Yes, indeed.
Great. So what has been the biggest challenge for you in getting this off the ground?
Oh, man. Well, we've been working on this project for over 5 years now, officially launched for 4 this coming Saturday. So there have been different challenges along the way. I'd say that, you know, one of the initial challenges was that when we first started, everyone would say, oh, that sounds cool, but are those jobs really out there? And now I think after 4 years with them, usually an active number of jobs over 1,000 at any given time, I think people are finally understanding that, yeah, these jobs are definitely out there. But over the course of the last 4 years, what's been really incredible but also a challenge is just that we've grown really organically. And so we have always focused on doing what we're most interested in and potentially what we're best at, which is just creating content that is of value to people. So that includes putting out our weekly newsletter every Tuesday, which for which the subject matter always changes and is usually very timely and current based on things that we're hearing or things that we're experiencing or stories that people are telling us. And curating the selection of jobs on the site, just making sure that there's always quality content there that would be of interest to people. But one of the interesting things about that is that we find that there's been somewhat a lack of diversity. So, you know, we have a particular voice. It probably speaks to a specific set of people, and most of those people are exactly like us. And that's great in certain ways because it means that, you know, they feel less alone and it really resonates with them. So I think to a large extent, our user base is exactly like us, you know, late 20s, early 30s, well-educated white women. And while that is great and we're happy for each and every one of them, you know, one of the things that we've been trying to work on is continually figuring out how we can create tools and resources that speak to other audiences and create a more diverse environment, because food systems and food culture and food justice are you know, something that pertains to every single person that walks the planet. So how can we create an environment that really speaks to this? Is one of our biggest challenges right now.
Yeah. You know, that challenge, I think, is across the board. You know, I'm on the planning committee for the next Long Island Food Conference. And we did this conference twice before already, although in prior years we had called it the Long Island Small Farm Summit. But we realized in our in our environment it's really more of a food conference because it's about growing food, but not so much from a farmer. It's more home growers and growing food and educating about food and also food policy and food sovereignty. But getting a diverse population out to the conference is a challenge. You know, there is a lack of color, to say the least, at the conference, and we're trying to change that. And it's hard to get everybody engaged. Mm-hmm. You know that they're, you know, that everybody is struggling with the same issues of, you know, of clean food and finding clean food and feeding their families and wanting to do the best.
And it is a challenge.
And
it's interesting because it's not just a color thing or an ethnicity thing, but definitely an economic spectrum thing. And, you know, coming from the going to the university that Slow Food Fund, I know that there are lots of criticisms and conversations around this idea that, you know, good food is only for the elite, and that's something that we really hope to, figure out some solutions for, because whether that is true or not, I think that there can always be strides that we can make to continue to ensure that food culture is passed down from one generation to the next, and that, you know, good food is a universal right for everyone. So that's of utmost importance to us right now.
Right, right. And education is such a part of that, for people to first learn that what they're eating is not what they think it is. You know, a hamburger is not just a hamburger from a fast food place. It contains all that pink slime and good stuff as well. So people need to know that, and we have to get that message out there.
Yeah, and we always love, I mean, I know particularly for me, I've always come to food from a place of pleasure, and I think everyone has to use their skills. I used to attend a bakery up in Vermont every Sunday, and I'm not of any sort of particular religious background, but if I had to choose a religion, it would probably be this bakery, and it was such a lovely ritual to go every week, and the owner said, I wish I could just have a soundtrack of you every time you enjoy one of my croissants, because I'm sure I sell a lot more. everyone has to find their strengths in terms of figuring out how to share the goodness, for sure.
Uh-huh. And what would you say was one thing you've learned from the process of getting good food jobs off the ground that you'd like to share with some of our listeners?
Well, that's hard. We've learned so much over the course of starting it. We learned how to start a business from scratch. We learned how to build a website. We learned how to be patient and believe in the foundation of what we started. We always tell people that we are growing slowly and steadily, and we're happy with that, which is a nice place to be in this world of corporate culture where everybody just wants more, faster. But I think that the primary takeaway, especially now that we can look back on it after 4 years, is that we are an example of the fact that you can do what it is you dream about doing, even if it doesn't fit someone else's definition of what a career is, or even if people don't understand right away how that would work. As Taylor had said before, I can't tell you how many people said, well, you think you can make a whole website out of jobs like that? Or where are those jobs going to come from? Who even
right.
has those jobs? Who wants those jobs? And, you know, we certainly heard their argument. You know, sometimes we thought, oh, gosh, I hope that we're right about this, you know. And it's something that we tell other people all the time, you know, believe in yourself. We believe in you. There's so much good to be done. So many creative ideas out there. If anything, we're just jealous of those who get to do all the other creative things that we didn't think of or don't have time or energy to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, the one thing that seems really different about your search engine and jobs, good food jobs, is that you're really building a community within it. It's not just someone that just comes to your website one time, looks for a job, and then goes away. But once they participate in looking for a job through your website, they almost enter a virtual community of people that care about food. And that, it just seems like so much more than just looking for a job. You're actually, you know, your newsletters are great, I should tell everybody. Newsletters are really wonderful and have great thought in them, and I've really been impressed. So I just want you to know that I think that really takes your website to a whole different level, because you do feel like you're part of a good food movement when you go to your website looking for a good food job. You feel like there is a movement there.
Thank you so much, Bhavani. That's among the greater compliments that we can definitely get about the site, because that's definitely our intention. And, you know, it's interesting. We live in a world of 6 billion people, and, you know, we used to live in New York City, and it's amazing how many times you can just be surrounded by people, but yet feel really alone. And we know that, you know, especially the job search process is a time when you can feel really alone. So if we can help to speak to people and get them talking and, you know, cultivate some meaningful relationships, then that's really where all the value is. So we really appreciate you saying that. And it's kind of funny because I was just having a conversation with someone the other day. I said, you know, yeah, I like 90% of the people that we interact with don't know what good food jobs is. And even when you explain it to them, they might not even get it. But when you come across that 10% of people that actually use the site, they are gushing and so full of gratitude and appreciation. And that makes us obviously feel so good to know that we're putting out something that's of value. But someone came up to me at an event a few weeks ago, and she said, oh, my God, I was at home and a friend was over and she used my computer and she wanted to go search something. So she typed in G-O-O into the browser and hit enter, because for, you know, half the free world, when you do that, Google comes up. But she said, you know, her friend was very surprised to see good food jobs as the first thing that came up. And she said, that's just a pretty good indication of how often I'm using your site, and how her friend was so surprised that anyone could use the site more than Google. But I think that we're really lucky to have such a dedicated community, and it speaks to the fact that it's definitely about more than just the jobs. It's about how people are living their lives and what they're interested in doing and what sort of communities they want to be a part of and what sort of communities they want to create, what kind of relationships they want to share.
And has it grown just by word of mouth, or do you actually do you have to promote it? Do you have to go to places that you consider a good food place and let them know about you, or do they already know that you exist?
Well, not everyone knows that we exist, unfortunately. But we do sort of a combination. We started with, you know, mostly word of mouth. And a few years ago, not long after we had launched the site, Taylor had this amazing idea to hire people to work as scouts who would post jobs. They would search, you know, the internet for companies who were hiring, companies that were really particularly aligned with our mission and represented areas of work that might not be, that might actually be underrepresented on the site, like agriculture, education, design, media, and post their job for free and then contact them and let them know that we had done that. It's kind of like a way of giving a coupon out, you know?
That's how I first found out about you. I guess I had posted something on Craigslist and then I got an email from you saying that you put my job on Good Food Jobs, and you know, it's a little trickier. I think your website is mostly based in Manhattan, right? Manhattan or the burbs, you know, the boroughs. Not so much Long Island. I'm sure there are people that, you know, are happy to come out and work on a farm out on the island and things like that. But you know, that's just what I found. You know, most people when they responded to me and found out that I was not in Manhattan, they weren't so interested.
Yeah, it's definitely something. I mean, when we talked about diversity before, geographic diversity is also a part of that. So when we started the site 4 years ago, Dorothy and I lived a few blocks away from each other in Brooklyn. And so our professional networks kind of stemmed from there. And so I would say, you know, over the course of these 4 years, I moved to Vermont. Dorothy moved out of the city. I then, you know, have been based in a bunch of rural places in the Northeast. So I'd say about 30, like a third of the jobs, maybe 30 to 35% are based in New York City, including the five boroughs. And then I'd say another third are from the Northeast. So, you know, all sorts of things from, you know, more rural areas like farms that are based in Vermont, or New Hampshire, Maine, but then also from urban locations like Philadelphia and Boston. Mm-hmm. And then the rest of the third represents the rest of the world. So we're still doing work in terms of the geographic diversity. And we try and post a lot of positions that are from diverse geographic locations. And most of the ones that do better are ones that would allow people to relocate for it. So sometimes if it's like a part-time job, then someone might not necessarily be able to
relocate. That makes sense.
But we're definitely, it's worth it to put it out there. Because one of the things that we're always telling people too is that, you know, so many folks just say, I'm not actually looking for a job, but I peruse the site just to see what's happening in terms of, you know, what companies are out there, what projects people are doing, what sort of opportunities there are.
Right.
People are really using it as a barometer for food culture cropping up in all different areas. And, you know, we've had people who have said, oh, thanks so much because of my job post. Someone actually contacted me to write an article about what I'm doing and things of that nature, which has been really cool to see.
Mm-hmm. So before we run out of time, can you share with everybody how they would get to your website or to either of you if they have a job they want to either look for or post?
Absolutely. Sure. You can visit www.goodfoodjobs.com, and you can also contact us. My email is dorothy@goodfoodjobs.com, D-O-R-O-T-H-Y, and Taylor is T-A-Y-L-O-R @goodfoodjobs.com.
Great.
So just so you know, if you go to the site, any of the email addresses go to one of us. So it's pretty easy to find us.
Great. Well, I thank you so much for the work you're doing and helping everybody out there who's really looking for that perfect job in the food movement. And thank you for the work you're doing. It's really helping a lot of people.
Thanks so much.
You too, Bhavani.
You're welcome. And everyone out there, have a great rest of the week. Enjoy your holiday if you're celebrating the new year. Have an easy fast. Happy Yom Kippur. And take a stand. Get active. We need everybody out there. I hope to see you all at the Global Frackdown on October 11th out in Long Beach. Bye for now.